She sounded like herself. No more killing people because they annoy him. No more making crazy weapons that will inevitably cause more problems than they solve because he had a bad day and wanted to destroy a civilization or two. Tad snorted. He likes mercy. He'll help us. Suddenly exhausted, as much by keeping a tight rein on himself as by the events of the past few days, Adam sat down on the rug and pulled Mercy onto his lap, where she couldn't get into trouble. When Mercy squeaked in surprise, though she didn't fight him, he said,
"No telling how long it will take the old Fay to answer. No sense for you to stand the whole time. Your knee is bothering you."
He noticed that she was keeping her weight off it. "Karek, then that step," she said, relaxing against him. "But it's my cheekbone that really hurts. Falling from Sylvia's apartment didn't help."
"Wait a moment," Tad said, and left them in the attic by themselves as he ran downstairs for something, closing the door behind him. "He left us alone in the heart of his father's power," said Azeel. "That's because I would kill you before I allowed you to do anything," Adam assured him with an easy voice. "Tad knows that we stand with him, Mercy and I. And if you think this is the center of Z's power, you are very much mistaken. This is a cache. He probably has 50 of them around somewhere. Paranoid old Fay."
Adam understood paranoia. It was a useful attribute if you were trying to keep the people you loved safe. Azeel didn't reply, which was probably a good thing. They needed more space between them before they could deal with each other safely. Tad came pounding back up the stairs with a deck of cards and a poker chip carousel. Mercy drew in a breath, and Adam looked at her. There was nothing Mercy enjoyed so much as complaining to people about the idiosyncrasies of werewolves. He had always found it charming and useful. He waited a moment, but she didn't say anything. Adam put his hand on her face and turned it gently toward Tad. It would be better if she explained the problem to him. Until Azeel and Adam had been properly introduced on Adam's territory, such things had a very well-established protocol so that no blood was shed, Azeel would be easy to offend. He and Adam had both been very careful not to pay too much attention to each other.
"Mercy, would you tell Tad why poker is a bad idea?" he asked her.
"Azeel and Adam don't know each other," she said amiably, "and even if they did, poker isn't really a good werewolf game." She appeared to consider that a moment. "Or rather, it is too good a werewolf game. It would end with bodies." Tad glanced at both wolves, one after the other.
"Seven up," he suggested. "War? Gin rummy? I know you play gin rummy because Warren taught me to play it when I was a kid." "Tell him," Adam said to Mercy.
"No games between two dominant wolves unless they know each other very well and have established their dominance. There was a very nasty chess match that happened in the Morox pack when I was 6 or 7. Bran put an end to it, but not before one of the wolves ended up with a pickaxe in his leg." Mercy continued instructing the uninitiated in her mercy, matter-of-fact fashion. "Adam and Warren could play, for instance, because, though they are both dominant wolves, Adam has firmly established himself as more dominant in both their eyes. One lost game won't make any difference. Daryl and Warren, though, are second and third in the pack hierarchy. They play CAGCT-DPBT during pack gaming days, but they play on the same side, always." Tad gave Mercy an assessing look.
"No poker, no gin rummy, and especially no chess if you don't want to end up pickaxed. And I didn't know you played CAGCT-DPBT.
"Werewolf games," Mercy said solemnly. "Play for keeps or go home." She was so cute sometimes it made Adam's heart hurt. She was also a killer CAGCT-DPBT player. The pack made Mercy and him play on opposite sides to keep it fair.
"I threw out my Go Fish cards a long time ago."
Tad's voice was dry.
"I'm gonna play some solitaire and leave the rest of you to twiddle your thumbs."
Exhausted, worried, and unhappy, Adam leaned against the wall and let his eyes half close in an old soldier's trick. He wasn't really asleep, but not really awake either. Any break in the current patterns of sound, sight, or scent would attract his attention. Tad sat down in front of the mirror and laid out a game of spider solitaire. He played 3 or 4 games and lost all of them. No cheating for Tad. Azeel seemed happy to occupy himself studying Z's little toys as far away as he could get from Adam.
The Moor wasn't exactly what Adam had expected. Much less crazy and also much better at the dance that kept everyone alive in a small room with two dominant wolves who were strangers to each other than a wolf of his reputation ought to be. Bran usually knew what he was doing, and that seemed to be true when he sent Azeel as well. Mercy wasn't sleeping, but she lay quietly in his lap. She liked to cuddle when they were alone. He decided to enjoy it because it settled the beast inside him a little. The wolf was convinced that as long as he held her, nothing could touch her. Neither could he. Not for long. Mercy put her hand on Adam's, and he could feel the silver go to work on his skin. He didn't react because he craved her touch more than he minded the burn, and she'd taken it for him, hadn't she? So maybe part of it was guilt, feeling that he deserved to hurt because he'd brought harm to her. She leaned forward, reading the titles on the books again. He opened his eyes a bit more to make sure she didn't try for that book that called to her again. Z had a modern college text on metallurgy right next to a very old book bound in leather with a title that was nearly indecipherable between the faded gold embossing and the old German script. And just out of easy reach was the little green linen-bound book with a warped cover that had fascinated her earlier. Mercy shifted restlessly, then froze, jerking her hands away from him. "I've burned you," she whispered, horrified. Tad looked up from dealing another round, and Azeel glanced their way, and then returned his attention to the fey weapons on the shelves.
"I'm a werewolf," Adam said softly. "It won't kill me."
She frowned at him, and he closed his eyes again.
"It's all right, Mercy. It's already healed."
He wanted to tell her not to worry, but then maybe she wouldn't. Not because she chose to follow his advice, but because of the damned fey artifact that made her obedient. An obedient Mercy because she had no choice. That was an abomination. She curled up, tucking her hands in where they couldn't accidentally touch him. She closed her eyes, too. He knew because he had only mostly shut his.
"The better to see you with, my dear," said the big bad wolf.
He also saw something else. Adam had a habit of keeping track of things in his environment, situational awareness. It had saved his butt more than once. He was especially aware of things that could be used as weapons. One of the blades on the shelves was moving. He didn't catch it in actual motion, but when they'd first come into the room, it had been in the back corner of the bottom shelf of the bookcase nearest the mirror. Now it was in the middle of the shelf and had slid nearly off the edge. He wondered if it might be chasing Azeel, if only very slowly. It was a hunting knife with a dark blade that showed just a touch of rust. The hilt was some sort of antler. When he closed his eyes a little more and turned his gaze so that the knife was in the corner of his vision, he could tell that there was some sort of runic lettering down the blade. But as soon as he looked directly at it again, the runes disappeared. Because Adam was carefully not watching the blade, he noticed something was happening to the mirror. The corners were darkening, until gradually it quit reflecting the room and looked more like a huge photo of a heavy gray silk curtain than a silver-backed glass mirror. Adam lifted his head to see it more clearly. As soon as the whole of it was dark, frost bloomed. It started in the very center of the mirror, as if it were very cold and someone was blowing on it with a warm, wet breath. A fog of ice spiderwebbed out in a crystalline sheet across the glass. As soon as the ice covered the entire surface, a darker line dripped down the middle of the mirror, and dark, calloused, long-fingered hands slid out of the glass and pulled the gray aside, sending a light snow to the rug that butted up against that end of the room. Z stepped through the mirror. Tad looked up and started gathering his cards together, though his game wasn't half finished yet. Azeel's eyes slitted, and he rolled to the balls of his feet, ready for whatever would come. Mercy turned her head and said, "Hey, Z, long time no see." The Z that stepped through the mirror wasn't the one Adam was used to. Gone was the glamour that he'd presented to the world. He was no slender, balding old man. His sharp-featured face was both unaged and ancient, with skin the color of fumed oak. His body showed the musculature of a man who spent his days before a hot fire bending metal to his will.
Mercedes, he said, what have you done to your lips?
Mercy touched her lips, but didn't say anything. Adam found that a hopeful sign. White gold hair slicked down over Z's shoulders like a waterfall of pale wheat. He wore, incongruously, a pair of black jeans and a gray flannel shirt with a motor oil stain on one cuff. On his feet were his old, battered, steel-toed boots. Azeel's lips curled back, and he snarled softly.
"Peace, wolfling," said Z in his usual impatient and crabby fashion. "It's been a long time since I hunted your kind, and, as I recall, you got away cleanly anyway. You have no axe to grind."
The old fay frowned at Tad, who had set the deck of cards on the poker caddy and gotten to his feet.
"What's wrong, Tad, that you've called me here?"
"What isn't is a better question," said Tad. "I'm really glad to see you. I don't know exactly where to start."
"If it helps," Z said, "I'm caught up to where someone has apparently taken most of the wolf pack captive. Last I heard, Mercy set you to guard Jesse and Gabriel while she went off to see how Kyle fared. I see that you managed to recover at least one of the wolves, Mercy."
"Adam recovered himself," Mercy told him. "The lips are from the silver." Z frowned at her and took a couple of steps nearer. Adam stood up and pulled Mercy to her feet beside him, unwilling to let this stranger with Z's eyes and voice approach him when he was in a vulnerable position.
"Silva?"
Mercy explained how Coyote told her to change the rules, and so she'd drunk the silver out of Adam's body. Adam intended on having a word or two with Coyote the next time he saw him, not that it would do any good. Mercy backtracked and began again with Stefan's helping her free Kyle and ran all the way through to escorting Azeel to Sylvia's house. "So I sent Jesse and Gabriel to take the kids to Kyle's house," Mercy said.
"In Marsilia's car, which now has a dent and a dead body in the back," said Z.
"It sounds worse than it is," she assured him.
"No,"
Adam disagreed.
"It is exactly as bad as it sounds." "You know these assassins?"
Z asked Tad.
"It was Sliver and Spice."
Tad leaned against the bookcase nearest him and caught the hunting knife before it fell on the ground. He frowned at it and set it back in the corner it had started in.
"You stay there," he told it.
Z smiled, and his face suddenly looked a lot more like the Z Adam knew.
"I wish you better luck than I have with that."
He nodded toward the knife.
"It doesn't like to stay in one place when interesting things are going on. How do you know it was Sliver and Spice? They are both skilled at hiding who and what they are."
"Here," said Tad, taking out the small bit of metal that the Fey Man's sword had turned into.
"This is yours. Sliver was using it on Azeel, who fought him off with a baseball bat from Walmart, and Sliver had to drop the glamour to keep up with him."
There was a bit of hero worship coming off Tad. "The Moor doesn't need a pesky magic blade to triumph over evil," Mercy murmured, and Adam gave her a sharp look. Z took the object from Tad, and in his hands it formed once more into a blade. This time, though, it was black as pitch, but only 2 feet long.
"Of course he did,"
Z said, sounding a little put out that Azeel had triumphed over one of his blades. But his face smoothed out, and he said,
"He outsmarted me for 3 weeks in high winter in the Alps. It stands to reason that the Spriggand would have no chance at all, even with such a blade as this."
"Sliver got away," Tad said, "but not before Adam showed up out of the blue and stole that sword from him."
"You didn't bring me here to tell me this," Z said.
He didn't look at Mercy, but Adam could feel his attention.
"Right," Tad said. "Mercy, touch your toes, then turn around 3 times.
Adam understood why Tad had to do it, but he couldn't help the unhappy sound he made.
"You need to quit giving her orders," he warned Tad.
He wasn't angry, not at Tad, anyway, but her easy compliance made his wolf want to jump out of his skin. The last time she'd been caught in this kind of magic, she'd been raped, and he remembered it, both wolf and man.
"Peace and quiet, also known as the Fairy Queen's gift," said Z,
in a contemplative voice that made Adam think that he wasn't the only one who was bothered by Mercy's obedience.
I had heard that it had surfaced again. Did Sliver and Spice get away with it?
Adam caught Mercy's shoulders and stopped her before she finished the second turn.
You don't have to listen to him anymore, Mercy. Stop.
No, Azeel said. The cuffs are in the trunk with the dead woman, who it is probably safe to assume is Spice.
He grimaced.
Did she pick the name from the singing group?
Tad smiled.
Not unless they were around a couple of centuries ago.
Sliver is alone?
Z sounded for a moment like a hunting wolf.
Interesting.
Then he looked at Mercy again, and some of the inhumanity slid away from him.
Stealing someone's willpower was always a rare and difficult fey gift, Z said. It's a spell easier to work on someone who is asleep or happy.
Mercy shivered, as if she were suddenly cold again. I don't like being obedient. Adam hugged her and wished he could go back and kill the man who'd done this to her last time before he'd hurt her. Wished at the very least he could protect her from her memories, because if this was making him remember, it had to be doing the same to her. Rage choked him, and Mercy patted his arm in reassurance. Z caught his eye and nodded grimly, and Adam knew he wasn't the only one unhappy that such a spell had caught Mercy again.
Peace and quiet was made as a gift for a fairy queen who collected the wrong fae's son into her court.
They'd run into a fairy queen before. They weren't fae royalty precisely, but had a gift that allowed them to enslave humans and fae alike. Almost like a honeybee queen, they set up courts designed to both feed their power and entertain them. Not Adam's favorite kind of fae.
She didn't last long, Z continued, because the cuffs only work for a short period of time on the fae, though it can be more permanent on humans.
Z put his hand under Mercy's chin and looked into her eyes.
The woman who gave the fairy queen the gift wanted her son back. Once the queen died, all the humans and fae went back to their old lives.
Without the glamour, his slate-gray eyes were brighter and odder colored. Beware of fairy gifts, Mercy said.
And Greeks bearing gifts, agreed Z without a pause. How do we break the spell? Adam asked. Killing the woman didn't seem to work.
Love's true kiss, Mercy said, though Adam had been asking Z. But I can't kiss Adam because it hurts him. Too much silver.
A kiss?
Adam looked at Z, who shrugged.
Actually, a kiss from someone who loves you is an effective remedy for a number of the effects of fey magic.
All right, then. Adam lifted Mercy's chin and kissed her. He'd kissed her at Sylvia's apartment, too, but this time he didn't let the burn of the silver distract him. He pictured Mercy in his mind. Mercy holding a plate of cookies in the hope that they would make her neighbor feel better after his wife left him. Mercy baring her teeth at him because he'd annoyed her by trying to make her stay safe. Mercy pulling the damn tires off the wreck in her backyard because she was mad at him. Mercy shooting Henry before the cowardly wolf could challenge Adam while he was hurt. And his lips first bled, then blistered against hers. He accepted the pain and put it behind him, letting his body feel only the softness and warmth of hers. He took in a breath through his nose and let her scent surround him. This was his Mercy, and he wanted her. Mind, body, and soul, she was his, and he was hers. The kiss warmed up, and he pulled her tighter into his body and let the heat of their kiss spread through his body in hopes it would catch flame in her. She returned his kiss, her body softening, his partner in this as in so many things. She fit against him well, all muscle with just a hint of softness, smelling of burnt oil, harsh orange-scented soap, and Mercy. Then every muscle in her body tensed, and she started to struggle. He held her just a little longer to relish her fight, which told him the spell had been broken. But Mercy knew how to break the grip of someone who was larger and stronger than she was. That he didn't want to hurt her was of more use to her than his strength was to him. She twisted her wrists to break his hold and ducked out and away.
Damn it, Adam, she raged at him while Adam caught his breath. You don't let me hurt you like that. You haven't eaten since God knows when because I can see your ribs. You've lost 20 pounds in 2 days. Too much shape-shifting, not enough food, and having to heal yourself every time you touch me just makes it worse. And then you let me hurt you, you stupid, stupid...
She was so mad the words wouldn't come out of her mouth.
Or you could try to force her to do something absolutely against her will, said Z casually. That works more often on this kind of magic than love's true kiss.
Chapter 9 Adam's lips were blistered, and his face looked like he had a bad sunburn. I'd done that to him.
You don't ever do that!
My voice, my whole body shook from the shock of the magic breaking, from my momentary inability to stop hurting Adam.
I just got you back!
The coyote inside me wanted to take a bite out of something, anything, in a frenzy.
I can't touch you without hurting you. Don't let me hurt you!
The last sentence came out as a whine, and I realized I was babbling. I shut up. Instinctively, I backed away, so I was in no danger of touching anyone. I didn't want to contaminate anyone with the remnants of that magic, filthy magic on me. Didn't want to hurt Adam again. Didn't want to touch him with my filthy skin. I was dirty, dirty. That was wrong. I knew that was wrong. An echo of trauma that never quite left me, though its hold was not as vicious as it had been. I tried to collect myself and center on the real issue here. On Adam. A trace of blood trickled down Adam's chin, but the red flush on his skin was disappearing as I watched. Silver burns. I touched my lips. It was from the silver, and not some weird taint of the magic that had robbed me of my will, or a taint that lingered from that long-ago rape. I knew that, but it still felt like the two were entwined, the fey magic and the marks on my mate's face.
That silver, said Z, is something I can help you with, Mercy.
I looked at him, my heart still pounding, with anger at Adam, with the release of a magical spell I hadn't really believed in until it left, and with a shadow of memory. I remembered listening to Tad tell us that I'd had my will stolen away, and I had been uninterested. I'd felt that way before.
The silver, Z told me,
his eyes sad, as if he knew where my thoughts were dwelling.
Just the silver. The rest is over and done.
Okay. My throat was tight, and I didn't want him to touch me. Didn't want anyone to touch me ever again, but I knew that made no sense.
Mercy.
Adam waited until I looked over and met his eyes.
You broke the spell the minute something happened that you didn't want. You were never really in its power, not once you didn't want to be.
His voice gave me an anchor, and I drew my unruly thoughts back in line. He'd be okay. His lips were healing a lot more slowly than usual, but as I'd yelled at him, he'd had a rough few days. He needed to eat something soon.
Mercy.
I nodded, so he'd know I'd heard him. I wasn't ready to risk talking right away. Too many things were raw, and Adam and I weren't alone.
Why didn't the cuff act right away? Asked Azeel.
Maybe he'd done it to take everyone's attention off me, but I didn't know him well enough to be sure.
The coyote that jumped in and attacked that fey, magic sword and all, was not without willpower.
It was when Adam came back, Tad said. It isn't easy to steal someone's will. With Huan's cup, before... He made an unhappy sound, looked at Azeel, who might or might not know about that incident. Before, when I'd been raped, because I could not resist the magic of the cup I'd drunk. Tad cleared his throat. The cup that worked on Mercy before used the act of drinking out of it to imply consent, and it was a more powerful artifact in the first place. Peace and quiet is a two-part spell, each lesser. The first is spelled to make the wearer happy and relaxed, sort of like the best marijuana ever. That leaves the prisoner vulnerable so that the second one can work to make the person wearing it compliant. The magic continues to work after the cuffs have been removed, so they could be used to subdue more than one prisoner. I rubbed the wrist the cuff had been on. I hadn't felt anything from it, though I'd been busy at the time. If she'd used the other cuff first, would I just have let her take me? Instead, the magic had snuck up behind me and taken me without giving me a fair chance to fight it. It had waited until the euphoria of having Adam back had left me defenseless, then stolen my will. "Will the magic come back if I relax again?" I asked, swallowing bile. I was safe. Adam was here, had been here the whole time. Nothing bad had happened, though I remembered the feel of the weeping ghost's attempt to take control of my body. What would have happened if Z hadn't built wards into the doorway that I could cross and the ghost could not? The walls of the room confined me when the coyote inside me wanted to run until I focused my eyes on Adam again. In his steady regard, I read my safety, as ridiculous as my need for it was. If the ghost had gained control, he'd have dealt with it, as he dealt with the fey magic that had turned me into a helpless doll.
"No," said Z firmly. "It isn't so easy to work magic upon you, Liebchen. One chance was all it had. Probably you'd have recovered on your own after a few days. The Fairy Queen's gift is weak, a designed weakness that brought about the downfall of the Fairy Queen who depended upon it too much."
I nodded, and the tightness in my belly eased. Z looked at Tad.
"It also isn't so easy to destroy an artifact, powerful or not. I would never advocate it, because it would put me in trouble with the Grey Lords."
He looked at the black blade and smiled a little, handing it back to Tad.
"Here, mein Sohn. You take this for a while. You might find it useful. Be careful, though. It is a hungry sword and likes best to eat magic, and it has a habit of betraying its wielder."
Tad smiled, worked whatever magic was necessary to turn it back into a steel grip with no blade in sight, and tucked it into the pocket of his jeans.
"I understand," he said, "and I know the stories about this sword." "Good."
Z looked at me.
"Removing the silver isn't going to be pleasant, Mercy."
He glanced at Adam.
"But we have to do it now, or maybe never. I don't know if I'll be able to use the mirror gate again."
He frowned.
"Ariana could attempt it, but her magic is not what it once was. Tad has the magic, but he doesn't know enough to ad-lib such a spell."
"Is magic ever pleasant?" I asked. "I'd rather you did it." I'd been hoping the old gremlin could do something about my little silver problem, and I wasn't going to let a little PTSD moment stop me. I braced myself, closed my eyes, and made sure I had control of my face. Z laid his hands on my cheeks and filled me with his magic. It didn't hurt at first. Z's magic had a flavor, one that spoke of oil, metal, movement, and red heat. I could feel the call of his magic, and it felt very different from the way I'd called the silver out of Adam. Gradually, my feet started to tingle. But as soon as that tingle started to travel upward, the sensation in my feet changed to a sizzle, like the bite of a red ant or two that rapidly increased to 1,000. The sensation followed the tingle all the way up my body. "Ow, ow, ow," I chanted.
"It didn't hurt when she took the silver from me,"
Adam said, sounding unhappy. I shut up. I could deal with a little stinging. Okay, a lot of stinging. I didn't need to upset Adam.
"Not being Coyote's child with a mystical connection to a werewolf, I have to follow the rules of magic," Z told Adam.
He pulled his hand away from my skin and frowned at the disc of silver he held while I caught my breath.
"This is a lot of silver to have scattered in your body, Mercy, and we are not finished yet. And you said that you already rid yourself of some of it?"
Adam nodded.
"I saw the bedroom floor."
He must have gone to Kyle's first then and followed me to Sylvia's.
"More silver came out than went in. They gave me 5 or so good shots of the stuff, but nowhere near the amount on the floor."
"Conservation of matter," said Azil, "would indicate that perhaps she pulled the silver from more than just you. How bad is the pack?"
"Conservation of matter," said Tad astringently, "is a funny concept when expressed by a werewolf. Who knows better that magic makes science blink than a 170-pound man who turns into a 250-pound werewolf?"
"They are not as bad as I'd feared,"
Adam said slowly, though he acknowledged Tad's comment with a smile.
I hadn't considered that she might have helped a lot of us. Most of them are still pretty sick, but Warren and Daryl are almost back to normal. Still, if there had been that much silver, even scattered through all the pack, we would all be dead.
But there are still some sick from the silver?
Z asked.
Yes.
Z waved to Tad.
Come over here and put your hand over mine. I'll show you how to do this so you can heal Adam's pack.
Cool, I said without enthusiasm, but my hackles had smoothed out again. I get to be a teaching exercise. Like a dog with a face full of porcupine quills, I found it harder to stand still and let silver be drawn out a second time. But the pain did focus my attention on the present, as did Adam's grim face. I gave him a cheery smile, and his frown deepened. Z taught magic the way he taught mechanicking, by making Tad do all the work while he stood behind him and made acerbic corrections. He did it in old German, and though I can get by in modern German, the old stuff sounds a bit like Welsh spoken by a Swedish man with marbles in his mouth. In the end, Tad held a dime-sized bit of silver. I rubbed the cramps out of my thighs, and Adam stalked back and forth like an enraged baboon I'd seen once at a zoo. Azeel had retreated to the far corner of the room with a book to keep his presence from inciting Adam further. If Tad intends to do this to the werewolves, I said through gritted teeth because every muscle on my body was cramping with equal insistence, then Adam will have to hold them down. Adam stalked over to me and began kneading my shoulders. I sighed in relief and let him work on them while I turned my attention to my left calf.
It won't be so difficult with the wolves, said Z. Their bodies are already working to get rid of the silver, and all it will require is a little assistance. They also heal faster. I'll keep watch, Adam promised me. Tad won't take any harm.
So are the Fae planning on taking over the world? I asked Z. He laughed so hard he couldn't speak for a few minutes.
The short answer is yes, he told me cheerfully.
Azeel set aside his book and quit pretending he was not interested. But, I said, and he laughed again.
Liebchen, he said, if they could all point their swords in the same direction for more than 10 seconds, they just might manage something scary. The reality is that everyone is tired of merely surviving and is looking for a way to thrive in this new world of iron.
He shrugged.
I don't know what will happen, except that things are changing.
I heard someone, Coyote, say that change is neither good nor bad, I told him. Behind me, Adam made a wolfish sound that meant disagreement.
The older you are, the more you fear change, even if you think you are in charge, especially if you think you are in charge. There are a lot of very old Fae.
Z inclined his head to Adam in a move that looked a lot more royal in his own shape than it did when he'd done it while wearing his human seeming.
As you say, I would tell you that there's nothing to worry about, except that there is. There are a lot of Fae who hate the humans' mercy. Some Fae hate them for the iron encircling the world. Some hate them for the loss of the old Underhill, even though we have replaced it. And some hate humans for their ease of procreation.
He sighed and looked old.
Hatred is not a useful thing.
To hear you say that, that is a thing I never thought to hear, no matter how old I became.
Azeel laughed, and Z raised an imperial eyebrow, and someone who didn't know him might not have seen the wry humor in his eyes.
Not useful,
Z said, then looked as though he was listening to something, though my ears didn't pick up anything strange.
But it is powerful. Someone is knocking at my door. I must return.
He put his hand on his son's shoulder.
Stay safe.
And you, Tad said.
And Z walked through the blackness that filled the mirror's frame as though it were just another doorway. He said something that I heard with my bones and not my ears, and the frame was filled with a mirror once more.
That is one I thought would never change, said Azeel thoughtfully.
He loved my mother, Tad told him. Love is more powerful than anything, even an old grumpy Fae who knows how to hate.
Azeel gave Tad a thoughtful look.
Indeed.
And then he looked back at the mirror.
Love is both useful and powerful, but seldom convenient. I don't know about that, Adam said. I found it pretty convenient.
That's not what you told me, I corrected him. And he laughed.
The ghost tried to give me trouble again on the way back down the stairway from Z's mirror room, but I wasn't stoned by Fey magic this time. Go away, I told her.
Mercy?
Adam was just behind me, and he put his hand on my back. Not you, I told him. It's the ghost. He growled, and it made me smile. Proving that she could do something other than cry, the ghost screamed at me, her face all but pressed to mine. No one else reacted. It was really ear-piercing, so someone would have reacted if they could hear it. It was just another one of those things that only I could perceive. Lucky me. For a long time, I thought that was the only thing I could do with ghosts, observe them. Then I'd met a vampire who could steal the power of those he consumed. He'd taken the power of a walker like me, and he'd been able to do more. I focused my attention on the ghost, borrowed a little alpha from Adam, though I didn't really need it, and said again, "Go away!" She disappeared abruptly, and there was a crash somewhere below. I heard Tad, who'd preceded us, run down the stairs to the main level. Azeel, like a lot of the older werewolves, didn't make any noise when he ran. When Adam and I got down there, Tad was sweeping up glass in the kitchen while Azeel watched. It looked as though the ghost had managed to dump all the dishes that had been in the drainer by the sink onto the floor. Tad looked at me as he dumped the shards in the garbage.
I thought you said all that she did was cry.
I think, I told him apologetically, that when I walked through the ghost without my usual mulishness, although she didn't quite manage to take me over, she did succeed in pulling herself a little closer to this world. She's probably going to be a little more of a presence here until the effect wears off.
We have a ghost.
I told you that already, I said.
Cool.
He set the dustpan on the counter and grinned at me.
Haunted houses are nifty.
Tell me that when she keeps you up all night with her sobbing, I told him. But if she gets too obstreperous, just let me know. I might be able to make her leave you alone. I hadn't done a lot of experimentation on that front. Ghosts had so little self-determination, bound as they were by the rules of their existence, taking any control away from them seemed like a crime. As long as they didn't try to possess me or bother my friends, they were safe from me.
Obstreperous, huh? Said Tad. I see you've been using that big word of the day calendar I got you last Christmas.
That is irrefragable, I told him solemnly. Silverless, demagicked, and vowing never to play word one-upmanship, or even Scrabble for that matter, with either Adam or Azeel, what exactly was a quick quid libet anyway, I drove to Kyle's, where we would meet with the cantrip agent and everyone else. Adam only raised his eyebrows when I told him I would drive, which meant he was really exhausted. He closed his eyes as soon as I got the car on the road, and no one said much on the trip. Probably with two dominant wolves who weren't in the same pack, it was just as well. Marsilia's car was parked in Kyle's driveway. I had to park the Corolla a block away because there were a lot of cars on the street, including a short bus that was covered with quotes from the Bible. Mostly from Romans, but there were a few Revelation quotes and a lot of Proverbs. Most of them I recognized, but the chapter and verse were helpfully spelled out on each just in case. When I paused to read, Adam gave a quiet laugh.
Elisaveta, he told me. I told her we had the whole pack to transport, and she showed up with a couple of vans, and that. She said that one of her nephews borrowed it from his church. He told them that he needed to move some things. They left it here for us to use until we get everyone all sorted out.
It's a good thing that Kyle's old neighbor is dead, I told him. Adam hadn't called me. He'd called the witch, who hadn't even bothered to answer my phone call. Every time I parked my poor old rabbit in front of Kyle's house, Kyle got a letter of complaint taped to his door. I can't imagine what he'd have done in response to this bus.
Hey, Adam said quietly into my ear. I called you first, but your phone was dead. Then I called Elisaveta.
It shouldn't have made me feel better. Elisaveta was more useful. He should have called her first. She could destroy evidence and had minions who could borrow vans, but he'd called me first instead. Impatient with myself for having been so jealous about something so stupid, I looked around for a distraction, and my eyes found the bus again. "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live," I told him, pointing at the front quarter panel. I wonder if Elisaveta saw that. It doesn't say werewolves, but I expect it is implied.
"Wives, be subject to your husbands," Adam deadpanned without looking at the bus. "Let your women keep silence in the churches."
Ah, Paul, he has so many useful things to say. "It is well for a man not to touch a woman," I replied sagely. And Adam laughed and kissed me. I stiffened, irrationally worried that Z might not have gotten all this over. But Adam made a sound closer to a purr than a growl, so I relaxed and participated.
"Do they always flirt with biblical quotes?" Azeel asked Tad.
In long-suffering tones, Tad said,
"They can flirt with the periodic table or a restaurant menu. We've learned to live with it. Get a room, you guys." "Quiet, pup," said Adam with mock sternness.
He gave my butt a promissory pat as he said,
"Respect your elders."
At Kyle's house, I took time to take a better look at the dent in Marsilia's car. It wasn't as bad as I remembered it, but it was bad enough. She was going to be furious, and I couldn't blame her. I just hoped she kept it between us and didn't try to involve the pack. The pack had sustained about as much damage as it could handle right now.
"Don't worry," Adam said. "We'll get it fixed."
"It can't make her hate me any more than she already does," I said, willing to look on the bright side.
"It might make her hate you more immediately," offered Tad,
and I laughed, even though he was right.
"She won't hurt Mercy," said Adam softly. "She knows better than that."
Azeel trailed past the trunk, nostrils flaring.
"The dead woman is still in the car."
He glanced around as if he was looking for something.
"Armstrong's rental is gone. He said he had some more coordinating to do with his people. He'll be back, though, sooner rather than later."
"Tell me about him,"
said Adam.
"I only had time to shake hands and go."
"I'm not your wolf," warned Azeel, his voice suddenly harsh.
Adam took in a breath of air and shook out his shoulders.
"Sorry," he said, looking at the car and not the other wolf. "Habit. We need to get ourselves ironed out before there's bloodshed. You've been very courteous, and I thank you for it. I'll try to do better. Would you share what you know about the cantrip agent with me?"
There was a pause, and I kept my eyes on Azeel, watching for a sign that he decided not to take Adam's apology. His eyes were yellow. That they'd shift back and forth so easily told me as much as his earlier warning had about how little control he had over his wolf.
"Charles vouches for him,"
Azeel said at last, letting the apology lie, which was the safest way to play it.
"Lynn Armstrong is a troubleshooter for Cantrip and has the power to make things happen. Charles told me to tell you that he can be trusted. As long as we're following our own rules, he won't rock the boat."
"Even with the blood of Cantrip agents hot on my hands?"
asked Adam softly. "Tell him the whole truth," I said impulsively. "Better yet, wait and catch Tony when he comes with Sylvia and tell the whole herd. We're in the right here, and they are the ones who benefit from lies."
"Talk to the lawyer first, since you have one immediately available to you," cautioned Azeel. "Then give the others as much truth as the lawyer tells you to, and not one word more."
"If you do that, we'll need time to get the story straight," I said.
"We'll tell him the truth,"
Adam said heavily.
"I'm tired of playing games. Maybe it's time to spread a little fear. If they had been a little more afraid of us, Peter would still be alive."
Adam opened the front door, and we were hit with a wave of noise and motion that only got louder when people realized who was at the door.
"Quiet,"
said Adam. And everyone, the wolves, security personnel, and what looked like 2 dozen little girls, though I knew that there really weren't that many, they just moved fast, shut up and stood still.
"Good."
He looked around.
"Where is Kyle? I need to talk to him and get y'all organized."
He was tired if he was drifting back into Southernisms. "I'll get him," said Mary Jo's voice in the back of the crowd. I caught a glimpse of her before she disappeared up the stairs. She was dressed in sweats that were too big for her, and her skin tone was greenish, like she'd just woken up after spending the night at an all-you-can-drink orgy. Jessie, with a little as Sandoval on her hip and her hair mussed and damp, waded through the crowd and kissed her dad on the cheek. She rested against him for a moment.
"Welcome home, Dad,"
He hugged her hard, then relaxed his hold to ruffle Maya's hair.
Maya said, I rode in a car with a dead body.
Adam gave me a laughing glance.
I guess we might as well tell everyone the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
It's a secret, Maya explained.
He ruffled her hair again.
Yes, but not a secret from your mom. You shouldn't keep those.
I tell Mama everything.
Good for you.
So, Jesse said, backing up a step, I hear that you managed to survive without Mercy to rescue you this time.
He smiled.
Brett, remember who's paying for your college.
She grinned at him.
Maybe I'll just get pregnant and work at fast food for the rest of my life.
She turned and trotted off the way she had come before he could formulate a reply. Amid laughter that had as much to do with relief we were safe as with Jesse's humor, Adam went to work, ordering the chaos. I waited for a while, watched various members of the pack come and go. They needed to check and make sure he was still okay, and I understood exactly how they felt. When he and Azeel disappeared together to take care of the who was the biggest, baddest wolf issue, I slipped away to the kitchen to look for food for Adam. Werewolves need to eat, and from the looks of him, wherever they'd held him, they hadn't fed him at all. Kyle's kitchen was a mess. Dirty dishes everywhere, and one whole counter was covered with trays of sandwiches that looked as though someone had called out a caterer at some point. I took a few minutes to unload clean dishes from the dishwasher and start the next batch running. Dominance displays take a little time. Then I snitched a heavy-duty paper plate from a stack on the counter and loaded it with four sandwiches thick with near-bloody roast beef. When I emerged from the kitchen, Adam was the only werewolf in sight, and the total volume of the noise in the house had dropped an appreciable amount. He was trying to push his security team gently out the door.
We don't think that the house is secured, and with all due respect, Mr. Brooks hired us.
I had never met Jim Gutstein, but I recognized his voice from several phone conversations. He was in his 50s, and still in the kind of shape primarily limited to professional athletes and werewolves. His dark gray eyes and jutting chin proclaimed his resistance to leaving, despite the tiredness even I, who did not know him, could see. Exhaustion, I knew, only made stubborn people more stubborn. Here, I told Adam, before he could say something that put Jim's back up even further than it already was. I had experience dealing with dominant personalities, most of them werewolves. A human had no chance. I put the plate in Adam's hand. You eat this. I turned to Adam's man. Jim, I'm Adam's wife, Mercy. It's very good to meet you. I opened the door and stepped into him, forcing him to back out the doorway. He'd have had to get more physical with me than he was comfortable with to stop me. The rest of his team followed me out. Thank you, I told him sincerely. Go home so Adam will sit down and eat. He's fine, he's grateful, and he'll talk to you on Monday. Leave a couple of people here and he'll never know. But you, Jim, need to sleep. Jim Gutstein frowned at me, but another one of the men put a hand on his shoulder.
She makes more sense than you do right now, Gutstein. Sleep, then you can give him hell. Chris and Todd have the house covered, and it is chock full of werewolves. You heard the boss, man. The likelihood of another mass attack is slim to none.
Good night, I said while they were still talking. I went back into the house and shut the door before Jim could bull or argue his way back in. Adam was alone in the foyer, holding his plate and looking at me with a bemused expression on his face. I decided I was on a roll and pointed toward the kitchen. You need to go eat that right now, mister, I said. He laughed, and I could see again how tired he was.
Yes, Madame Alpha Coyote, I do. Would you join me? I think everyone else will keep for now.
He meant for more than food. Only a blind woman could miss it. It was a gentle invitation, and I could pretend not to see. Could escort him into the kitchen and get started on the dishes while he ate. This is a big house, I said instead. But there is a pack of werewolves lurking somewhere, as well as your daughter, her boyfriend, a police officer, a federal agent coming back shortly, and a pack of Sandoval girls. I'm not sure there's a spare space anywhere. Adam smiled, and I was glad I hadn't just taken him to the kitchen.
Leave that to me.
We ended up sneaking out to the garage and up a rope ladder into the attic space above. Sunlight illuminated the room from a pair of skylights. The walls were finished and painted a light teal that complemented the dense cobalt carpet, but there were no lights or furniture. "How did you know this was here?" I asked. I pulled up the rope ladder and pulled the trapdoor up until it latched. No sense giving obvious clues about where we were if we were going to sneak off alone. Adam set his plate down on the floor.
"Warren, he said he and Kyle could keep everyone out of their bedroom, but that stealth might work better for us."
He looked at me, and his warm brown eyes had a touch of gold, and his voice was a little hoarse.
"Let me see your skin, Mercy. I need to know you are okay."
I stripped, feeling a little self-conscious. I didn't mind being naked, but a woman likes to be pretty for her mate, and I was covered with bruises, cuts, and bumps. My bad knee was swollen and probably purple to boot. At least my lips weren't silver anymore. I didn't cover myself up, but I turned my back to him as I slid Kyle's sweats down my legs.
"Mercy," he said.
"Yes?" I glanced back at him to see that he was pulling off his shirt.
"A bargain for us," he said. "I will not hide from you if you don't hide from me."
The idea of Adam's hiding from anything left my mouth open while he made short work of the rest of his clothes, so I had to hurry to catch up. He was right. I didn't feel quite so naked when he was naked, too. He didn't say anything, just touched my bruises with light fingers. When he paused at my cheek, I said, "That was the car wreck." He frowned at me. "Okay, the car wreck, and then it hit the ground when the Fey assassin jumped on my back." He went on like that, him touching a cut, a bruise, a bump, and I'd tell him what happened. When he was finished, he put his forehead on my shoulder and pulled me hard against him.
"You'll be the death of me," he told me. "I could wish you less bold, less brave, less driven by right and wrong."
"Too bad for you," I commiserated. "I know it's rough. My husband tried to kill himself to save the pack, you know. And earlier today he faced down a Fae he knew nothing about, and some of the Fae are forces of nature."
"My wife was going to fight him," explained Adam. "I had to protect him from that."
I laughed.
"You know what Jesse's mother would have done if the feds came and took the pack while she was my wife?"
he asked. "Filed for divorce," I hypothesized. It was his turn to laugh.
"Point to you. And then she would go to everyone she knew and tell them how awful her life was, how people expected too much of her. Do you know what my second wife did?"
"Got beaten up and ran in circles mostly while you rescued yourself," I told him.
"She cared for the pack that was left," he said. "She got my child to safety. She got word to Bran, who sent help. She stepped between my child and those who would harm her."
I snorted. "Sounds like a paragon."
"She saved my life and gave me strength to save the rest of the pack."
He heaved a sigh and pulled back so he could look at me.
"And I have this urge to turn you over my knee and bruise your butt so that you do exactly what my first wife did."
I narrowed my eyes at him. "You ever lay a hand on me, and you better never go to sleep again." He laughed, sat down on the carpeted floor, more as though he just couldn't stand up anymore than as if he'd actually made the decision to sit, and laughed some more. He was very, very tired, but he had just threatened to spank me, so he got no sympathy for me. I folded my arms. He wiped his eyes with his thumb and looked up at me. His laughter had died altogether.
"You don't know how fragile you are, Mercy. The last time we got into trouble, you spent months in a wheelchair. You fight as long and as hard as any werewolf without any of the weapons we've been given. You are smart, you are careful, and you've been very, very lucky. And that scares me more than any spriggand carrying one of Z's swords or a cantrip zealot armed with silver. Luck runs out."
"I tell you what," I said, sitting beside him and biting down the urge to feed him the line he'd given me. "Did you think I'd die of old age?" I hadn't found it funny at the time and didn't think that he would either. "Think of me as Coyote's daughter, if that helps you. Coyote is lucky." Adam shook his head.
"No, Mercy. Coyote isn't lucky. Coyote is rash, and everyone around him dies, including him. But when the sun rises, he's all better, and he goes out to look for new friends, because Coyote is immortal.
And you are not. He didn't say it, but we both heard it. I tapped on the floor and then leaned forward, time for a distraction. This coyote is all better right now. Are you and I going to be friends, Wolf? He canted his head and touched my chin with his hand.
I don't know. Are you going to keep doing your best to get yourself killed?
It hadn't been I who had been trying to commit suicide. I hadn't realized I was still mad at him about that. I turned my head and nipped his finger. I'd meant it as a chastisement, but he didn't take it that way. Gold lit his eyes with fire, and he left his finger where it was.
I guess so,
he said, sounding resigned, but his lips were soft on mine. Both of us dozed a bit afterward, not really asleep, but too content to get up. I buried my nose under his ear, where his scent could wrap around me. I licked tenderly at the warm skin of his neck.
Peter is dead,
he told me suddenly. I put my weight on his chest so he wouldn't feel so alone. Yes.
It was my job to protect him.
The average werewolf lives 10 years after he has changed, I reminded Adam. A human has 70 years or so upon the earth before his time is done. Peter was older than that, 4 times older than you are. His was not a short life, and his death was quick. It wasn't enough, and I knew it, but it would count for something later when his death wasn't so near.
My fault, Adam said.
Someone who didn't know him would have thought his voice was calm.
There were not so many of them. If I had attacked them when they came to take the pack...
You thought they were feds, I said. He knew all of this, but if he needed to have me say it again, then I would. If werewolves start killing federal agents, soon there won't be any werewolves. It was the right thing to do. I was there when Peter was killed, and it could have been any one of you. Jones had decided to kill someone, and nothing would have stopped him.
Jones is dead.
But his body was relaxing underneath me. Adam wasn't stupid. This wasn't the first time bad things happened that he couldn't control. I'm not surprised. He huffed a laugh.
I didn't kill him.
I lifted my head so I could see his face. That does surprise me.
I killed the rest of them, and let Honey kill Jones.
He watched my face closely. He'd hidden what he was from his first wife, who had been entirely human, and she'd still run away from what little she'd glimpsed. Good, I said. That way I won't have to. He laughed again, and his body softened as much as it ever did. There just wasn't much soft about Adam.
I love you, he said.
I know, I told him seriously. How could you help it? He laughed again and rolled over until I was on the bottom and flexed his hips against mine.
I tried, he whispered in my ear, but it didn't work.
I breathed into his ear for the pleasure of feeling him shiver against me. Of course not. He smelled like home, like safety, like love. Of course not.
I promise I won't spank you,
he told me, his voice rough and low as he added,
not unless you ask me to.
I let him feel my laugh against his shoulder. That's because you aren't genuinely suicidal. We loved again then, the short nap of the rug soft under my skin and the warmth of him surrounding me. Afterward, he fell asleep while he was eating, between one bite and the next, like a toddler. I don't think that he had slept since a pack was taken. He didn't even stir when I pulled away from him to go put my clothes on. The room might have been finished, but it was not heated. Adam was a werewolf, which meant the colder the better for him. Not so for me. Fully clothed, I sat down next to him to watch over him while he slept. The quiet time didn't last. The door between house and garage opened no more than 20 minutes after Adam dropped off. Warren called,
"Sorry, boss. You're needed if you don't want Kyle to shoot the rest of the pack."
He didn't speak that loudly, but Adam's eyes opened up anyway. He smiled at me and said,
"Good to know. Tell Kyle to hold up and I'll be right down."
Warren steadied the rope ladder when Adam tossed it out of the trap door.
"We put the pack downstairs in the big room to create some space apart from the Sandoval girls."
The big room was the largest room in the house, and it had a pool table and a stairway leading to an outside door into the backyard. Kyle's house was bigger than ours, but not set up for groups of people quite this large.
"They wouldn't do anything on purpose," Warren said as I climbed down the rope ladder behind Adam, "but we're all on edge,